You're getting a view into the locker room that you don't normally see.
A sanitized view.
Not a natural scorer.
The honest opinion, he's not doing the job that they hired him to do.
I just disagree.
Accelerating your hockey learning curve. This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
Reaching for it. It came spilling into toward the corner. First one after goes Taves. Taves will play it along the boards here. In on him. He's double teamed there. Now he got by Enstrom and Stafford. Put it out in front. The shot. They score. Andrew Ladd going toward the net. All the work was done by Taves. And it's a little tap in for the former captain of the Winnipeg Jets. And it's 3-0 Chicago.
Good morning, Winnipeg. Good morning, Manitoba. And for all those joining us live this morning at TSN1290.ca, good morning, universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. That third period goal by former Winnipeg Jets captain Andrew Ladd, current member of the Chicago Blackhawks, gave the Hawks a 3-0 lead, and it was all over but the crying at that point in time as the Hawks go on to a 4-0 victory here in Winnipeg. Andrew Ladd's homecoming after being traded at the trade deadline. I'm your host, Drew Mindell, joined in studio by Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. You can always reach us in studio by sending us a tweet at Illegal Curve, facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news is IllegalCurve.com. Gentlemen, it was a 4-0 victory for the Chicago Blackhawks, a game that was tied after the halfway point, but then the Hawks in the second half of the game absolutely took over. They win 4-0, get two late second-period goals and two early third-period goals, including that one by Andrew Ladd. Your thoughts on last night's game in general, your thoughts on Andrew Ladd's homecoming. Let's start with that there, Ezzy.
Yeah, I guess really the story was Andrew Ladd coming back to Winnipeg. And yeah, good morning, guys. It was a pretty special time there for Andrew Ladd, especially when during the first TV timeout, they showed a little video tribute, and you could see that Andrew Ladd was really getting pretty choked up there. And, you know, the game, they lose 4-0. After Chicago went up 2-0, that game was over. Marian Hossa scored the goal 26 seconds after Patrick Kane scored his goal. And really, I thought that the Jets really kind of gave up on themselves at that point. The Jets were good for the first 25 or 27 minutes of that game. And Scott Darling just had an answer for every good scoring chance that the Jets had. So it was a disappointing game, but it really wasn't the Jets' best effort. And I thought the Calgary game was very disappointing as well, after the Jets picked up a couple of wins against Colorado and Vancouver. So at home on a Friday night, if you're Paul Maurice and the coaching staff, you probably weren't really happy with the way the Jets responded to Chicago going up 2-0. But this is the Stanley Cup champions here. I mean, defending Stanley Cup champions. Mm-hmm. And even though the Chicago Blackhawks came into this game struggling, we talked about it on the NHL This Week show earlier in the week. I mean, this Chicago team, I wouldn't be surprised if they're still going to be there when it matters. I'm not saying they're going to win the Stanley Cup. I'm just saying for any team going up against the Chicago Blackhawks in the Western Conference, you're going to have to beat an excellent defense, probably the best defense in the NHL. Corey Crawford is having one of his best seasons. And then you've got Patrick Kane, who's well on his way to 100 points. So the game was disappointing. The Jets didn't play very well in the second and third periods. But again, for me, this night will be all about Andrew Ladd. And I thought that the Jets fans were very classy. And Andrew Ladd's a classy guy, and I think he deserved that. I had no questions that he would be getting a nice standing ovation. And I thought it was nice that he scored a goal. I mean, he gets the third goal. He gets the second star of the game, I believe. And it was a great night for him. But again, I mean, at this point in the season, the Jets are out of it, so it doesn't really matter if they lose. They're still going to go out there and try, but the game is meaningless, let's be honest, guys. So it's nice for Andrew Ladd to come home and get a nice warm reception.
Yeah, for the first half of the game, piggybacking on Ezzy's comments, for the first half of the game, it was pretty close. You know, you had some chances both ways and pretty good goaltending. And the second half of the game, or basically near the latter part of the second period to the third period, it's, you know, the old Claude Noel saying that they were playing chess and the Jets were playing checkers. And it was true. I mean, the Chicago just started playing keep away and just turned it up a notch. And the Jets, I agree with Ezzy, kind of, you know, they don't quit. I'm not going to say a team quit, but they certainly folded when faced with adversity last night. And the game was over. As soon as Marian Hossa scored, the game was over. And the Hawks were impressive. I was, you know, you can't help but be impressed with their top-end skill. They have better depth on the front lines than they used to. I do have some concerns about their defense, but that's the bottom end of their defense. Their top end of their defense is excellent and as good as it gets.
You look at the Jets, and you know, in the last couple games, the game against Calgary on Wednesday night, which of course you know they got down 3-0 after 20 minutes, and that was pretty much all she wrote for that game. And then you look at last night, and you know, like you guys said, they were playing with Chicago for the first period, for the first half of the game, give or take. And then you know, you just said it, Rich, when adversity struck, and you know the Blackhawks sort of stepped their game up another notch. You know, the Jets weren't able to match it. No, that's not a surprise. You look at the talent disparity between the two rosters, and, you know, this is a game the Blackhawks, you know, like you said, they've been struggling. They still have designs on winning the Central Division or, you know, getting home ice advantage in the first round at the very least. So this is a game the Blackhawks needed more than the Jets, and when push came to shove, they took it away from the Jets. Well, they didn't take it away from the Jets, pardon me. They just took the game. They just took it over.
Jets have nothing to play for. So, I mean, and that's, you can see that's the case. Mm-hmm. It's pretty obvious. You know, teams don't tank. We talked about that. But when there's something on the line or not something on the line, it's pretty clear. And then you're just talking. Then you can just forget that aspect of it. Just then you look at the straight talent level.
Yeah.
And it's just not comparable. But one of the things that if you look at the Jets' goals yesterday, I mean, I'm not looking at those goals from the other team from Chicago and saying, I'm saying they're very skilled, impressive goals. Fleischmann's deke. You know, Ladd going right to the net, a nice pass from Taves, Kane's exquisite hands in the first goal, and Anisimov, nice play, forecheck and creative play, not creative, but a good forecheck on the second goal. What I see in all the goals is mistakes by the Jets and defensive errors that are, to me, you know, need to be eliminated, and you see too many of. So that's something that I think is something that can be prevented. Which would give me some pause in terms of how the Jets are playing defensively. That's always been my concern. The squad, we said at the first show of the season, the show right before the season started, you know, this team should be able to create offense. I mean, yesterday they weren't able to score, at least create chances. But can they defend? And yesterday I was not impressed with the turnovers and the defensive effort and decision-making, really. And that goes throughout the lineup. I mean, Drew Stafford turnover, Mark Scheifele losing his guy in front. To me, Jacob Trouba and Tyler Myers kind of being timid in defensive situations on two of those goals. You know, it leaves you with a lot of questions in terms of defensive play, because when these guys come back, even the guys who were skating yesterday, whether it be Ehlers and Armia, that's going to help your skill. But still, you have to make sure you are able to play a tighter defensive game.
Yeah, I agree with you, Rich. And I don't think that was Jacob Trouba and Tyler Myers' best game. I don't think the Enstrom-Bufflin pair, that was their best game either. And especially against a team like Chicago, we've talked about it quite a bit, especially last year in the playoffs. Their quick strike offense, you make a mistake, they're going to make you pay for it. And Patrick Kane scores a goal, which kind of looks like it's out of nothing. And a beautiful backhanded goal. And then Marian Hossa, as Rich mentioned, I mean, a defensive mistake, and then it's 2-0. And then it's really tough to come back against a team that is not only good defensively, but Scott Darling, let's give him credit. I mean, he earned his star yesterday, and, you know, he made some key saves which kept Chicago in the game and allowed them to take the lead in the second period. So it's a very talented team. And at this point in the season, guys, the Jets have to get up for games. They have to find reasons to get up for games, whether it's playing the role of spoiler. So tomorrow afternoon, you're going to play an Anaheim Ducks team that's trying to improve their seeding in the Western Conference, in the Pacific Division. Mm-hmm. So you have to get up for these games. You have to find a reason to get up for these games. You're not going to the playoffs, and you know that the younger players on this team are trying to prove something to the coaching staff. So you know that those guys are going to be really trying, and so you have to expect that out of the rest of the team. I mean, there's nothing else that you can really say here. I mean, they're not going to the playoffs, and you just can't get by with kind of 20-minute, 25-minute effort games. You have to really get more out of the team than that.
can't argue with either of the analysis you guys have provided. Wanted to ask you about your thoughts on Nick Petan's game last night. First time we've seen him back up with the Winnipeg Jets squad since he was sent down, made the team out of training camp, sent down to the Manitoba Moose, you know, about 10 or so games into the season. Played 15 minutes and 23 seconds last night. Your thoughts on Nick Petan's performance?
Yeah, I thought he was good. Drew, you mentioned he played 15 minutes, which is maybe a little bit more than you thought he would play. He played the point on the power play several times. He had, I believe, just under 3 minutes of power play time there. You know, it's a player who hasn't played in the NHL since November. He's coming into a bit of a tough situation, expecting offense out of Nick Petan against a really good Chicago team who's been struggling. So he obviously didn't get on the score sheet, but I think Nick Petan does have a very bright future. And you look at how he was deployed on the power play. He's got good vision. He can move the puck around. He's a speedy guy. For a small guy, he's not afraid to go into the corners and mix it up a little bit. So I thought he was pretty impressive, you know, in a game where not much was expected out of him. I don't think at this point in the season, Jets are out of the playoffs. They're expecting Nick Petan to score 2 goals a game. They're expecting Nick Petan to play well in both zones and everything like that. So I think for a guy who factors into the Jets' long-term plans, I think he played pretty well.
Yeah, Drew, I mean, you know, he got some opportunity on the power play. The Jets' power play was one of the reasons I thought they lost yesterday, so weren't able to generate enough. I thought his pace was pretty good. And I think, you know, the skating has, to me, been a bit of a concern in terms of how effective he'll be at the next level, but just see more first before making a real judgment on that.
Jets next in action tomorrow afternoon against the Anaheim Ducks. We'll be joined later in the program by Josh Brewster to talk more about the Ducks. But you look at the remaining schedule for the Winnipeg Jets, and you're thinking, you know, how many really, you know, games are left that are what you would describe as to be winnable? I mean, I think we're talking, you know, less than five, certainly. You figure that home game against Ottawa, maybe that home game against Vancouver. But everything else, you know,
depends on who plays.
From the team, you're saying? Mm-hmm. Right, I know, but it depends on who plays from the team, but it sounds like the only really effective member of the team that's close to returning is Nikolai Ehlers, and he's still a week away. I mean, Joel Armia, too, to some degree.
Yeah, it helps their skill level, those two guys.
It certainly helps their skill level, but I mean, would you hold those guys out, or is there value in bringing them back into the lineup if it's the last week of the season? Because Paul Maurice said yesterday they're still a week out from really beginning to be in the conversation.
Yeah, so you're a week out. What's today, the 19th?
Yeah.
So you bring him back for the last week and a half. Yeah, I mean, if a guy's ready, to me, you play him. If it's questionable and you'd rather tank, you know, then you probably hold him up. It's questionable. But if he's actually ready, then I mean, the guy has to play.
Well, I think that, you know, when you're looking at the point in the season and the fact that the Jets aren't going to make the playoffs, that should have no impact on it. I mean, if Nikolai Ehlers is healthy... Yeah. Nikolai Ehlers would want to finish the season having played some games. He doesn't want to finish the season with an eye injury and not having played any games. So he will play. And as far as the rest of the games, it doesn't matter. What does it matter if the Jets win any games? I mean, they're not making the playoffs. So, you know, you could look at the schedule right now and you could say, what games are they going to win? First off, they can beat any team. They can beat Anaheim. I mean, they beat Chicago 3 times in Chicago last year. The Jets are a good team. They're not as bad as their record indicates. But I think going through the schedule right now and picking which games they're going to win is useless.
Fair enough. Let's head to break then. When we come back, we will look at what an expansion draft might mean for the Winnipeg Jets and their roster going forward. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
The Illegal Curve Hockey Show. You're listening to The Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Drew, Ezra, and Richard return on TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live on TSN 1290. This segment brought to you by the Linden Market Dental Center, official dentist of Illegal Curve Hockey. Don't be an Ezzy. Always wear a mouth guard and give yourself peace of mind protection as well as facial, teeth, and mouth protection. For more information about the Linden Market Dental Center, visit lindenmarketdentalcenter.com. Gentlemen, one of the more interesting news items to come out of the NHL's general managers meetings is that we now have a clear idea of the rules surrounding a potential NHL expansion draft. Now, the NHL certainly hasn't confirmed that they are going to expand, but
I'm going to go
out on a limb and say, for all intents and purposes, they're going to expand.
Vegas is getting a team.
Yes, I would agree with you that Vegas is getting a team, and that'll be the 31st NHL franchise.
Makes no sense. Like, why would you go to one extra team? Like, are you going to go to two? Like, isn't the point, like, have every, you know?
Nothing they do makes sense. With that as the caveat, as the umbrella comment over over this entire program, that nothing the NHL usually does makes a lot of sense. We can delve deeper into the numbers. And the rules are that if they expand by one team, each franchise will only be eligible to lose one player. If they expand by two teams, you'll be eligible to lose two players. It'll be up to each of the existing franchises to decide which of the following they want to protect. Option A is 7 forwards, 3 defensemen, and 1 goalie for a total of 11 roster players, or 8 skaters and 1 goalie, meaning if you want to, you know, protect 4 forwards and 4 D, you can, but it will cost you 1 extra player. For the Winnipeg Jets, one other caveat I should mention, of course, is that any player who are still in their first or second season in either the AHL or the NHL will be exempt from the expansion draft. For example, a guy like Eric Comrie, who will just be concluding his second season as a pro, will not be eligible to be drafted in an NHL expansion draft. So let's go to the Winnipeg Jets and how they currently, you know, line up. Do you think that they'd be more interested in protecting 8 skaters and 1 goalie, or 7 forwards, 3 defensemen and 1 goalie?
Well, I mean, the two-player difference is significant.
Yes.
But, I mean, based on the way their roster is currently constructed, you'd think that they'd want to protect Myers, Enstrom, Bufflin, and Trouba from their as their 4D. I mean, you do have to take into consideration contract situations at the end. We're assuming it's going to be at the end of next season, correct?
We're assuming that it'll be right before the NHL draft next year. So if the NHL draft next season is, let's say, June the 27th, picking a date, but it's going to be somewhere close to that. Mm-hmm. We imagine the expansion draft will be held right before that, and players' contracts, of course, don't expire until June the 30th. So,
right.
For
so,
examples of guys like Matthew Perreault and Drew Stafford, who are unrestricted free agents at the end of next season, they will be left unprotected by the Winnipeg Jets.
I mean, I would right now, the way the roster is today, you protect 4 defensemen. That's what I would do. If you lose, you can't lose Bufflin for nothing. You can't lose Myers for nothing. And you can't lose Trouba for nothing. And then Enstrom, I know some people don't want him there. Well, I would still protect Enstrom. You're going to have 2 years left on his deal. He's your only credible left side guy to me. Like, your only guy who I would feel comfortable in the top 4 of a left side. And does a lot of things that, again, he doesn't get credit for. So if you take into account the young guys up front aren't going to need to be exposed, the fact, as you mentioned rightfully there, Drew, that some of these forwards like Perreault and Stafford, depending on their contract situations or if they're even on the roster, you're going to leave them unprotected because they're going to be free agents a couple days after this expansion draft. And I think there you'd go with the protecting the 8 skaters and keeping at least 4D. You can even argue Josh Morrissey should be in there. I don't know right now if you'd feel comfortable doing that, but you're going to want to protect Wheeler, Little, Scheifele.
Josh Morrissey will be fine.
Why? He played in the pros last year, and he played in the pros this year.
Now, what's not yet clear is how many games. I mean, he only played last year. He didn't play in the pros at all last year. It was 2 years ago where he played for the Ice Caps.
Didn't Morrissey play in the AHL last year? Am I missing something?
I'm looking at his stats
played
right
for
now.
Last
he played
year.
For Kelowna
okay,
last year.
Okay, sorry. Then, yeah, that's not an issue.
Yeah, Morrissey won't be an issue for next
Drew,
year.
Drew, it's probably going to be 2 full years or similarly of pro experience.
Yes.
So. Sorry, no, he wouldn't be. Then that's my mistake. He wouldn't be. So then you go 8 skaters. As of right now, to me, you go 8 skaters.
Yeah, and Richie, you mentioned the obvious ones, right? Blake Wheeler, Brian Little, Mark Scheifele, those are the obvious ones. And then once you get past that, I mean, you'd probably say Adam Lowry, who's going to be going into his 5th year. He would be protected. And then it gets a little bit dicey after that, guys, because Dave Minuk had a good article up. Maybe we'll tweet it out from our Twitter account, but then you get into Who are you protecting? Are you protecting a guy like Matthew Perreault, who would be a pending UFA?
Wouldn't make any sense.
You wouldn't protect him because, I mean, if you protected him, you still might lose him 5 days later in free agency.
Right. So who are you protecting? Joel Armia, Alexander Burmistrov, RFAs?
I mean, these aren't hard. These aren't like, I mean, the Jets do not exactly have a problem there. Lucky for them, they're going to have a lot of young talent coming through the system.
Sure. Marco Dano. And, I mean, Drew mentioned Eric Comrie, but the key guys that are exempt from this, Kyle Connor, Nikolai Ehlers. So they're not losing those guys, Jack Roslovic or any of these guys, because they haven't played pro enough. Mm-hmm. Nikolai Ehlers will have played two pro years at that point. So I agree with Richie. I mean, the key ones are you're going to want to protect four defensemen. You're going to want to protect Buff, Trouba, Myers, and Enstrom. So you can't lose any of those guys. And Hellebuck is your obvious goalie protection. Mm-hmm. And then after that, I mean, I agree, Rich. I mean, if you're protecting seven forwards after Wheeler, Little, Scheifele, Lowry,
well, seven forwards means you're only taking 3D. So if you're taking four forwards, if you're taking 4D in the second option.
Or six forwards, yeah.
The second option is eight skaters of any variety.
Yeah, so four forwards, four defensemen, as we're talking right now.
That's right. Once you're protecting your top 4D, which we've said, you know, then you're protecting.
And Scheifele, Little, Wheeler.
Scheifele, Little, Wheeler, and then pick one other guy, and there's your nine guys. We're talking
about third line guys there. We're not talking about top six guys.
Or sorry, I thought you could go 6 and 4, but you have to go 7 and 3.
It's seven forwards, 3D, and one goalie, or eight skaters of any variety. You could protect eight defense if you wanted to.
If that was the case, Drew, then the Jets would go 6 and 4. I think they'd rather protect four defensemen.
Well, they have to. They have to protect the four defensemen. They have to protect their top four. Not have to, but I'm confused
here. Under option one, how many defensemen can you protect?
Three. Under option one, you can protect three defensemen. Seven forwards, 3D, and one goalie.
So then why did you just say they have to protect four?
Well, we said in the other option it's eight skaters, so you'd protect four defensemen, and then you'd have four forwards to protect.
That's right. And your four forwards really aren't, like you said, it's not a difficult decision because you don't have to worry about Ehlers and you don't have to worry about Connor. You have to protect Little.
And Morrissey, too.
Morrissey won't.
He's not in the same class as those guys, but yeah.
You have to protect Little, Scheifele, Wheeler.
And one.
And Burmistrov or Dano.
Dano
or
would be a
Armia.
Guy I'd expect them to protect.
I mean, it's one of those guys. So you will possibly lose somebody from your bottom six. Or Lowry could be the guy you have to protect as well.
Well, yeah, he'd be in there too. But I'm saying, like, these are all third, fourth line guys right now.
It's not a tremendously difficult decision.
It's not like this team is up again. Like, people are going to make it out to be that this is like a really tough decision. I mean, it might be a difficult decision, but in context of the quality of player you're losing, there are other teams who will be in a far more difficult position to make that decision.
Like, Dave had Burmistrov on his list, and I would respectfully disagree with Dave. If you've only got nine players to protect, Alexander Burmistrov, who right now is a third or fourth liner in the NHL, he wouldn't be one of the guys that I
protect. Who would you protect then? Like, if you're basically talking Dano, Lowry... Because Dano will have played 3 years.
Mm-hmm. I would protect Dano and Armia over Burmy.
You can't protect both of them.
Well, one of those two.
Not Lowry. So you're saying that you would protect that? You would choose Dano over Lowry? Because you can only protect one of them.
That would be a tough one.
I can't see the Jets. I mean, I would have to think that the Jets would protect Adam Lowry.
Well, if he has another season like this year, you don't know if that's the case, Drew.
That's a fair point. I mean, it depends on what, you know.
I mean, it also depends on how the young guys play. I mean, if the young guys really are scoring at a high clip, is a guy like Marco Dano, who's more offensive, a luxury that you can afford to lose and you need the size? Remember, the Jets have gotten pretty small here, guys. So Adam Lowry certainly doesn't have the skill level of a lot of the other guys, but he has the size and the intensity and the physicality that the Jets lack now. I mean, you look around, look at the game yesterday. I mean, you're putting out there Perreault and Burmistrov and Patan, your team is small.
Sure.
And I'm not saying that doesn't mean they can't be effective, but you can't all be small. So you wonder if that'll be a factor as well.
And if Lowry signs a 5-year contract extension or he signs a 2-year contract extension, it's going to be minimum 2 years, but maybe they sign him to more than that. If they sign him to 3, 4, 5 years, I think they would probably protect him.
You're saying the writing's on the wall based on the contract they sign, they sign this season.
It's an absolutely fair point.
I would agree with that. That the writing, you know, you'll see sort of a strategy for how the Jets go forward. You know, if you're an expansion team, would you want to acquire an RFA?
I don't even have a problem with it. Getting to the cap is not going to be an issue,
right?
And it's not like a guy like that's going to be demanding big money. But he's already going. I mean, yeah, do you want to? Sometimes maybe you want to. You control it more so, you know, long term, short term, and you have a year to really scout around. We'll ask Tom Lynn later how long they have to kind of build their idea of what they want. And they're going to have, like, guys, they're going to have a pretty good idea of what, like, the expansion drafting team is going to put together a roster. Like, this is what we want to do.
Richie, sure. If they like the player, they're going to, and he's an RFA, they're going to take him.
That's right.
Because they're going to say, Adam Lowry, he could be our third line center. We're going to sign him. Or he's already signed.
Well, let me ask you, this isn't specific to the Jets, but, you know, the NHL is making a concerted effort to make the, you know, expansion team better than previous expansion teams. How do you feel about that? Are you okay with the NHL sort of, you know, changing the system to really benefit a new team coming in?
Yeah, I think that's fair. I mean, all you talk about is competitive balance, blah, 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 competitive balance. Then, you know, put your money where your mouth is. That's a lot of money.
As in, you've paid us $500 million. The least we can provide to you is a decent quality NHL team.
Yeah, and I think that it helps interest, especially if you're going to a place like Vegas and you're not 100% confident you'll get the interest that you want, then you want to be competitive quickly, at least not getting blown out and way at the bottom of the standings.
And Richie, the last time there was an expansion draft, go back to Atlanta, Minnesota, Columbus. Mm-hmm. There just weren't as many good players available, right? So I think it is fair for an expansion team to get to pick from some pretty good players. And this is going to be tough. We talked about this. We were talking about this up in the press box last night. When you're talking about the deeper teams, the Chicagos, the Washingtons, the St. Louis's, they're going to have a lot tougher decisions than some of the younger teams like the Jets. And you're going to have some really good players who aren't protected.
Yeah, you certainly are. There are going to be, for the teams that are Stanley Cup contenders, they're going to have some tough decisions to make.
The other aspect of this is this the expansion team wants, or do they want to be bad like all these Canadian teams right now and get these high picks? Are they going to be too good to not get the high picks and build? I mean, that might be a concern for them. I don't know.
If they were going to Quebec City, I think you could make an argument because it doesn't matter what they put on the ice in Quebec City. It's going to be sold out.
Yeah.
But to your point, when they're going to Vegas, you know, Vegas isn't going to sit there and back a losing hockey team for 41 home games just because they have it.
What draft pick will the expansion team get?
Well, that's another question. I mean, I assume they're not going to be like the old NBA rules where you're restricting them to picking first because the Raptors won the lottery one year, pushed down because there was a rule that the expansion team couldn't get the first pick. I would assume they'll be in the lottery with pretty heavy weight. You'd have to think.
It's a 99. Atlanta got the first overall pick.
In reality, if it's an expansion team and you look at your starting fresh, now they could end up being, after the draft, better than some of the bottom feeders, but do you give them the first pick or a top three pick minimum?
Sure. Can try and build them up that way. Let's head to break. When we come back, we're going to head out to Finland and talk to our old friend Juha Hitela. He covers Finnish hockey. He used to cover the NHL. Lots to talk about with the two prospects and Curry and Timu at the Heritage Classic. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
The Illegal Curve Hockey Show. The Curve Crew are back. It's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
Shortly after 9:30 in the morning, Saturday the 19th of March, welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. I'm your host, Drew Mandel, joined in studio by Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We are pleased to welcome back to our program Juha Hitela. Juha covers Finnish hockey for Usanomat newspaper in Finland. Juha, always good to speak with you. How are you this morning?
I'm good. It's actually afternoon here, but good morning to you guys in Winnipeg.
Exactly, those pesky time changes. Juha, we wanted to bring you on. Lots going on in regards to, you know, Finnish hockey. Of course, you have the two great draft prospects upcoming, and we'll talk to you about them. We want to start, though, with the Heritage Classic. It was announced last week, about 10 days ago here in Winnipeg, that the Heritage Classic is going to be held between the Winnipeg Jets and the Edmonton Oilers this coming October. And when you talk, you know, Oilers of the 80s and you talk Jets of the 90s, two great Finnish hockey players come to mind. Timo Salani, Jari Kurri, of course, is who I'm speaking about. What sort of impact did that make? Did it resonate at all in Finland? Will there be excitement overseas in Finland to see those two great players of Finnish hockey on the ice at the same time?
It was noticed. Let's say every news outlet kind of recognized that they're going to play, face each other, Jari wearing Oilers jersey and Timo obviously wearing original Jets jersey. And it was recognized, but it didn't kind of generate that much buzz yet. But when the game actually is held next year, I hope that Finnish TV will pick up, and I assume they're going to pick it up, and they're going to show it here, and then it's going to be a little bit bigger. The original Jets, not as much as the Oilers of the 80s, even though Jari won so many Stanley Cups there, and there was Esa Tikkanen and all those other Finns, that was the time when NHL was not shown in Finland. So it was basically just the box scores from the newspaper, but that Timo in the original Jets, that was the era when Finn started to literally follow NHL. There was games on TV. So a lot of people kind of have a nostalgic memories of that old Jets, not just because of Timo, but Phil Housley and all those other players.
Juha, Drew mentioned it at the top of the segment, the two highly regarded draft prospects for the 2016 draft. Of course, we're talking about Jesse Puljujärvi and Patrick Laine, who really, I think, came into their own in the World Junior Championship with that great Finnish team along with Sebastian Aho. Of those two players, both guys playing in Finland this year, Laine with Tapera, and then you have Puljujärvi playing with Karpat. Of those two players, which would you say is going to go higher in the draft? And is this the most excited that you've been and the country of Finland's been for Finnish forward prospects in a long time?
Yes. We'll start about that. The last question first. For sure. Potential, I'd say slam dunk, those two are going to be in top three. Maybe two and three. Somebody might say Laine will go number one, even though consensus is still with Matthews. But those two, and plus, the word is that Ulevi, who's playing for London Knights, might be in top five. So there's a chance that three Finnish players are going to be in top five, and that would be unprecedented. So, yeah, there's a big hype surrounding those two, obviously, especially after the World Juniors. I mean, the amount of attention those two are getting post-game, you go out of the arena and there's like 100 teenage girls waiting for them. So this country hasn't seen anything like since Timo was 18, 19, 20 years old. So this is very, very unusual for us.
You have for people who haven't seen these kids play, who do they remind you of, respectively?
I don't want to say remind. I don't want to compare anybody. Let's put it this way. Puljujärvi is a complete forward. I mean, he's big. He's fast. He can play. He can set up plays. He plays with a physical edge. Laine is also big, also fast. He's more of a sniper. He plays more with the instinct. Maybe somehow Puljujärvi reminds me a little bit about Jari Lehtinen, but with a better scoring upside, if you guys remember the former Finnish Selkie Trophy winner.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Our guest is Juha Hitela. He covers hockey for Sanomat newspaper in Finland. You look at, you know, the history of Finnish hockey, and it's always been that they've had, you know, they've always been competitive on the international scene, and they've always had good players, and they've had some, you know, tremendous talent, of course, in Timo and Jari Kurri, but that's almost, you know, give or take sort of 20 years ago since they've come on the scene. Are we entering into a new era with Laine and Puljujärvi and Sasha Barkov for the Florida Panthers? Are we entering a new era of Finnish hockey that has elite top-end scoring talent?
For sure. If you look at 1983 foreign players, in 1984 there was Tuomarutu, Mikko Koivu, Valtteri Filppula. Those three are the last kind of, we can say, elite players. None of them are really superstars, but really good NHL players. After that, there hasn't really been anybody since maybe Michael Granlund, who was born in 92. Mm-hmm. And now these new young kids, Olli Määttä, Teuvo Teravainen, Barkov, Ristolainen, and now these two young kids. So, yeah, this is definitely a new era, which is, I have to give a praise to Finnish Hockey Association. They kind of had a big summit, just like Canada had after Nagano. They had this summit in 2009 where they say, well, we don't get any first-round picks. We don't succeed in World Juniors, and it looks like we're not going to succeed that much, that well anymore in Men's World Championships. And there's a chance that we're not going to get any NHL players. What should we do? They switched the way they think about the junior coaching. It's no more of an individual skill. They are very heavy on skating and kind of and skills and have a right kind of attitude with the players.
Yeah, you have. We were going over the World Cup rosters, and kind of, you know, there's always been that rivalry, of course, between Finland and Sweden. But we look at the Swedish team, and you talk about, you know, Finland taking a look at where they stand in 2009. The Swedish team, we noticed there's a significant drop off, maybe especially a forward from the veteran players who, in say 4 years or in the next Olympics, may not be playing or as effective, and then the next group, and it seems like Sweden hasn't really develop players, maybe as some expected. Is Finland gaining and possibly even with them?
In some sense, yeah. Maybe you don't see that yet in next Olympics. Maybe in 2022. Mm-hmm. But if you look at Swedish defense corps at the World Cup, you look at those guys, Strålman and Hedman and Ekman Larsson and Carlson, and you compare that to Finland and you say, gee, those guys are still a little bit better in that mm-hmm. perspective than Finland.
Johan, we wanted to ask you about the story that you actually broke about Olli Määttä of the Pittsburgh Penguins and how he's going to serve in the Finnish Army in April. And some of us, you know, already knew that Finland has mandatory military service. If you remember, well, I know you would remember this, but before Teemu Selänne came over to play for the Winnipeg Jets, he actually served in the Finnish Army. But for those who aren't familiar with how it works in Finland with your service in the Army and how it would work, because you mentioned that other Finnish players like Alexander Barkov, Kasperi Kapanen, Teuvo Teravainen, they're also going to have to serve. But how is it going to work for these Finnish hockey players that have to still serve in the Army in Finland?
Well, the mandatory minimum service time is, I think it's 165 days right now, so it's around 6 months. They are going to do it in two separate off seasons. First, 3 months in a year one, 3 months in second year. That's how they're going to do it. The regular guys like me, I've served 6 months in a row, but they're going to do it, and they're really flexible. They have a different, they have a special group and special training for athletes, not just hockey players, but all different kind of athletes. The same group that Olli Määttä is going in, or is supposed to go in. There's around 80 athletes from different sports, from Olympic sports, soccer players, different kind of athletes. So they're really flexible on that.
Well, Juha, we'll let you go on this last question. And, you know, going back to the Team Finland, you know, lately in the last decade, you know, Finnish goaltending has been dominated by Tuukka Rask and Pekka Rinne. Both of them are into their 30s now and sort of on the downside of their career. I think Rinne is maybe aging a little bit quicker than Tuukka Rask is. You know, the future of Finnish goaltending, is that player, you know, been identified as he's going to be the one to take over that mantle? We know there's other, you know, very good Finnish goaltenders, you know, Lehtinen and Niemi and Ramo, but is there that next, you know, dominant Finnish goaltender that we're going to be seeing here in the NHL?
I don't think there's going to be as dominant as Rask or Rinne or Kiprusov, but there's going to be a couple of, I think, who can make really good NHL players. Jonas Korpisalo has already played in Columbus. I think he was recalled today.
Yes.
Then there's Juuso Saros, who played one game earlier in Nashville, and then there's Joni Ortio, who's played a couple of games in the last two seasons in Calgary. Those three are born in 90s, and they're going to be the next wave. I don't think none of them are going to be as good as those top guys we mentioned earlier, but they're going to be good NHL goalies. But the fact is that Sweden and Canada and every other country in the world already knows how to coach goaltending. Finns have been stupid. They've given up all the information they have to other countries. They've invited Canadians and Swedes and Russians and Americans and showed us, everybody, how this is how we train our goals. So everybody knows how to do it nowadays.
Juha Hitela covers Finland hockey for Usano Mat newspaper. He's actually going to cover Patrick Laine's playoff game coming up here in a few minutes' time. So, Juha, we really appreciate your time this morning, and thanks very much for joining us on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Thank you, guys.
Take care, Juha. Let's head to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
The Illegal Curve Hockey Show. You're on the curve. The Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
A big thank you to Juha Hitela, who joined us from Helsinki. Talk about Finland hockey. You know, always some great insight from Juha. This segment of the show brought to you by Frank and Mauro Zappia of Zappia Group Realty, official realtors of Illegal Curve Hockey. When 95% of your clients come via referral, it shows your commitment to honesty, integrity, and a total dedication to client satisfaction. For all your real estate needs, come shake hands with Frank and Mauro Zappia online at zappiagroup.com. As we sit here, Richard, on the 19th of March, and you look at the NHL draft lottery standings, the Edmonton Oilers sit in fourth spot, have the fourth best odds of winning the draft lottery. That's likely to change. They're probably going to get a better percentage chance to win the draft lottery because they've played more games than everyone else, so it's conceivable that they will be passed in the standings. Leads to the next segment where we discuss if the NHL should change the draft lottery rules. This was discussed at the general managers meetings that just concluded in Florida. The NHL's GMs decided not to make any changes to the draft lottery. This is going to be the first year in which the lottery is for the top three picks, not just the number one overall pick. St. Louis Blues GM Doug Armstrong said to the Toronto Sun's Mike Zeisberger that he'd be in favor of a five-year waiting period before a lucky lottery winner could pick first overall again. A lucky lottery winner is described as a team that didn't have the best odds of winning the lottery that jumped up to end up winning the lottery. Your thoughts? Call it the Edmonton Oilers rule. Should a rule be in place that prevents teams from being a lucky lottery winner multiple times in an X number of year period?
You can argue that a rule should be in place. I think that rule is stupid, though. I mean, you can't win. You can only win it once in 5 years, and that's if you get the first overall pick. And so, I mean, there are teams that are just terrible. And, I mean, look at all the teams that are good right now. Chicago, Kane won. What, Taves was three? You know, that's obviously it's an important element of building the team. Pittsburgh, what, Fleury was one, Crosby was one, what, Malkin was two.
Right behind Ovechkin.
Yeah,
right?
And Staal was two.
Yes.
Now he's since been traded. But, I mean, you look at these teams, Ovechkin was one, Backstrom was, I think, four. So, I don't know. I just think that rule, to me, like, there was a rule that if you finish last, Doug Armstrong proposed, if you finish last...
I'll read this entire quote. Here's Doug Armstrong to Mike Zeisberger of the Toronto Sun. Quote, "I think people are concerned that the wrong teams are being rewarded based on luck."
That's called the lottery.
The theory is that if
that's the theory of the lottery.
The theory is that if you finish last, you always have a chance to win the lottery. So if you finish last 3 years in a row, you can win the lottery 3 years in a row.
Okay, well, let me jump in there for a second. So if you finish 1 point out of last each of those years, and these meaningless games, the Jets have been playing essentially meaningless games in terms of the overall standings.
Six weeks, eight weeks.
Yeah, and so you're going to say 1 point differentiates, some bounce differentiates one team from being able to win the lottery versus not? Sorry, I don't like that idea at all.
Continuing, but if you didn't finish last and win the lottery, you can't do it again for another 5 years. I'd be moderately flexible on the number of years, but here's my point. You can get lucky in winning the lottery once, but that's it. As?
I don't know. It's Rich? A lottery. I mean, your odds are that you won't win it that many times. So you win. Build a better team. You know, Drew, Edmonton goes both ways before Ezzie gets in here. Edmonton goes both ways. They're the argument that they shouldn't get the first overall pick, and they're the argument that they should because they've had so many and they're still terrible. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. It doesn't cure everything. And Detroit's been in the playoffs for 25 years. Doesn't draft high ever. And they've been good, and they've developed all young players, Larkin, Tatar, and Nyquist. So, I mean, I understand the frustration with it all and putting in the rule. I have to say, when I really think about it, I don't think I'd be in favor of that rule. I think the system as it is, and I like opening it up to top three. I think the system as it is right now is fine. I have no issue with it.
Ezzie, I'll let you get in, but also keep this. We're going to ask this. Should they expand the lottery even further? So, Ezzie, talk about how it currently is and the proposed rule change, and then talk about, should they expand it even further?
What do you mean by that before he gets in?
Should they expand the lottery to, instead of being the top three, should it be the top five, the top seven?
Okay.
Well, I've already read all these. I mean, Michael Tracos had an excellent article for the National Post, Five Ways to Improve the NHL Draft Lottery. And, you know, Richie's point is valid. I mean, if you're going to change the rules and not allow a team to have a first, second, third overall pick in consecutive years, then, I mean, that's really going to make it difficult for teams that are struggling year after year. And it's possible. I mean, Edmonton guys, it's not like Edmonton decided that they wanted to be bad year after year after year. I mean, they've tried to build a winner there. It's not like these guys are saying, oh, yeah, let's finish bad again so we can have another first overall pick. That's not how it works. They just haven't picked the right players, and they haven't surrounded those prospects with the right mix of veteran players. So I think that when you're talking about these proposed rules, do some of them make sense? I would be in favor, and it's been called, well, Michael Tracos called it Hunger Games. I think that if you have kind of a playoff for non-playoff teams and you reward a team that's already eliminated from the playoffs and they win by rewarding them with a higher draft pick, I think that would make for more exciting hockey.
So hang on, here's what Michael's proposing. A single elimination tournament for the 14 teams that don't make the playoffs. The winner of that 14 team tournament would get the number one pick, the runner up second, and so on.
No, what's the format of the 14 game tournament? I mean, I've heard different strategies. One would be that once the teams are mathematically eliminated, the most points that whoever accumulates the most points per game, proportionate because some teams could be out earlier, will be the team that qualifies for the first pick. Now, what's going to happen? Well, the Toronto Maple Leafs are going to do exactly what they did this year. Stack their AHL team, have some young guys down there who can contribute, and have an awful NHL team and move everybody for injured players or just move everybody who's productive at all, even if they know, granted they're on bad contracts. Once they're out of it, bring up Nylander, bring up all these young guys, and then try and perform. Like, there's always a way around it. Like, the NHL is getting too reactionary here. Something happens, they got to change. Didn't they just change the top three? They haven't even done the top three lottery yet. They want to possibly, I know they didn't change, but they're talking about changing it again. I don't know. I don't see the reason, the need for it.
Here's Edmonton Oilers general manager Peter Chiarelli in the same article to the Toronto Sun's Mike Zeisberger. Quote, "It's not an unreasonable thing in light of us winning the lottery last year," when asked about how many times in a row a team can profit from sheer luck in winning the lottery. "If we didn't win the lottery last year, but we were the fourth pick, would it have come up again? I don't know.
It's a great question.
I'm sure we'll have to talk about it in the next couple of days." You know, that was right before the general manager's meetings began.
I thought about it, you know, in terms of a rule and limiting and...
Because, correct me if I'm wrong, you used to be in favor of a rule of limiting the number of times you can pick first overall.
Yeah.
In a row.
Yeah. And I've thought about it more, and I thought, you know what? I think too many rules around it. Just let it happen as it is. If these teams are just that bad, man, I don't like the fact that poor management's resulting in the beneficial... For the teams,
sure,
that bothers me. But at the end of the day, they're still terrible, and the cap kind of is your evening point, anyways, right? I mean, if you draft 5 years in a row the top guy and they all perform to the highest expectations, you can't keep all of them, anyways.
You might already have won a Stanley Cup a number of times by
that
point.
Well, so be it. But then how does that manager, who if he's the same guy who put him into the basement, reload? I don't know. I guess it's something interesting to watch. But yeah, my view has changed on that, Drew.
Ez?
I think that none of these things are going to happen, by the way. I think they're
going to... I agree with you there.
I think they're great ideas that Michael Tracos brings up, and I think the NHL likes to and the media likes to bring this up and talk about how unfair it is that the Edmonton Oilers have had this many first overall picks. But the reality is, if you want true parity, you want to reward teams that finished poorly the previous season. So the way the system is right now is by design. So I don't think it's going to change. I think the NHL draft lottery is going to stay very same. It just changed recently. Well, so
it's contrary, as your point, contrary to everything that they talk about. Parity, parity. Every team's the same. Every team's in it. Fake 500 records and this and that. You know, it's a sales job to the entire public that every team is within 5 points of one another. And then you're going to go the other way on this. Well, it's not consistent. And usually Gary Bettman and Daly, their message is pretty well aligned in terms of issue to issue.
Sure. The NBA, and we're trying to get Zach Lowe on the program to talk about the age restriction, which mm-hmm. we brought up last week on the show. Mm-hmm. The NBA is supposedly also considering a radical overhaul to how they determine who gets drafted first overall. They'd have, I believe it's called the wheel system, where it wouldn't be necessarily dependent on previous season's record, but rather it would be dependent on, from year 1 through 3, you draft in this spot this many times. Like, there's a range that, it sort of just continually moves, that no matter how well or how poor you do the year before, your draft position is somewhat predetermined.
So what happens if you're like the Philadelphia 76ers, for example, and you have 5 people at your games and you can't draft in a high pick? What happens to markets that just completely tank from poor management?
Well, then they're in a lot of trouble. I mean, they're... It's hard to believe that they're ever going to get out of that.
Well, the point Rich is trying to make is that they need a high draft pick.
Sure, they need hope.
Especially when there's a player, I mean, if you're talking basketball, whether it's a player like LeBron James mm-hmm. or Steph Curry, or right now you're talking Austin Matthews, or the year after Nolan Patrick, right?
Mm-hmm.
So these are good ideas. And I think, by the way, guys, the Edmonton Oilers picking first overall year after year, that's an aberration. I mean, you haven't seen that happen very much. If you go over the years, I mean, we saw Chicago. Richie mentioned a couple of segments ago getting Patrick Kane and Jonathan Taves 2006, 2007. And Tampa Bay getting Steven Stamkos, Victor Hedman 2008, 2009. I mean, those teams were in the Stanley Cup Finals last year, right? So you're mm-hmm. expecting Edmonton, I mean, with Connor McDavid, guys, And you know, they add a couple of defensemen. Their goaltending's been solidified. Would any of us be surprised if Edmonton's in the Stanley Cup Finals 2 or 3 years from now? I mean, they should be based on how many first overall picks they have, right?
Any defenseman, right? That's the thing. But yeah, but I mean, also the other argument is that maybe the NHL wants these guys to, would think you want these guys to play together, have a superstar team, an attractive team that maybe is dominant, Ezzy, and maybe does drive ratings if they ever put anybody other than the Rangers and Pittsburgh on in the States.
Well, I mean, it goes to show you how short-sighted the NHL is. They all want parity, parity, parity. The Golden State Warriors are the most exciting thing in basketball.
That's right.
The San Antonio Spurs are the second most exciting thing in basketball. They're playing each other tonight. Neither team has lost on home court. You're telling me that people would rather watch parity games as opposed to those two dominant teams?
Well, I'm sure that rating the game will get better ratings than the NCAAs. I'd have to assume, based on the fact that is the most talked about teams in pro sports right now.
Yeah, and what they're doing is because it's dominant players performing at their peak.
Back to the 10, 20 years ago in terms of that, and then even the Yankees of the end of the 90s and the Red Sox and the dominant teams. I would look to be in favor of something like that, and I think my view has changed. There's middle ground there that would make me say, okay, you can't get the first pick, but you can still get the second or third, or you can't get the first, but you can get the third and the fourth, and then the next year you can... Like, there are better options. I think Doug Armstrong's view, and I think Doug Armstrong is a sharp GM, but I think his view and his proposal is too simple. It doesn't work well enough. I'd be open to other suggestions, and if there are different views of a kind of a hybrid model, I'm sure that probably something I'd be on board with. But as it is right now, I think the NHL is reacting too quickly to other teams and people's complaints.
Let's head to break. When we come back, we talk to the former assistant general manager of the Minnesota Wild, Tom Lynn. He was there when the Wild participated in the 2000 expansion draft. We'll get his insights next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
The Illegal Curve Hockey Show. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Drew, Ezra, and Richard return on TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
Hour two of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show for this Saturday morning. I'm your host, Drew Mandel. Richard Pollock, Ezra Ginsberg join me in studio. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and the website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We are pleased to welcome back to the program Tom Lynn. Tom is currently a principal with Veritas Hockey. Formerly, he was the assistant general manager of the Minnesota Wild, particularly so when the Wild were entering the NHL back in the year 2000 with their expansion draft alongside the Columbus Blue Jackets. Tom, good morning, and thanks very much for joining us.
Good morning, guys. I just realized your initial spell Dre. I was like, I'm on with Dr. Dre.
I've never thought about that before, but that is, okay, you've blown my mind already. It's 10 a.m. in the morning. Tom, obviously brought you on to talk about the talk around the expansion draft and the NHL potentially expanding to Las Vegas or maybe Quebec City or who knows, some other market. Topeka, Kansas, I think, is also in the running. You hear now that the NHL is much more interested in making sure that the Las Vegas whatevers form a competitive team right off the start. Looking back now, you were there for the Minnesota Wild in the year 2000. Obviously the NHL didn't quite have that same level of concern for you guys when you were entering the league.
Yeah, and I don't trust the rationale there very much. When we came into the league, the bidders were lined up for expansion teams, but the price was relatively low, $80 million at the time, so the league could put the screws to them. Now the league wants such a high price, $500 million for a team. They're out there in advance saying, oh, it's going to be a good situation for the expansion team. We're really going to give them players. The reality is that they'll do as little as they can to help the team, and I'm not blaming them. I mean, they don't want to give away what they have. You guys don't give a lot to rival radio shows yourself, and yeah, it's just the way business goes. But I think it's a lot of much ado about nothing. They just want to keep the price up, so they're saying, hey, we're going to help out this new expansion team. But they'll put the screw to them wherever they can.
So, Tom, back in 2000, the first six draft picks in the expansion draft were goaltenders. Rick Tabarachi was drafted by Columbus, and then you had Minnesota scooping up a young Jamie McLennan, an aging Mike Vernon, and a somewhat aging Chris Terreri, I would say.
Right.
This time around, whether it's Las Vegas and Quebec or just Las Vegas or just Quebec that's going to be joining the NHL, do you expect that team to also scoop up goalies right off the bat?
Well, and to be fair, we had to pick goalies first, the way it was set up. It was goalies, then D, then forwards would be drafted by category. And if you lost a goalie, you couldn't lose a D for the existing teams. So what you saw in the goalies was Tabarachi and Vernon were taken, not because we wanted them, because we had prearranged trades for them already in place. And Craig Button was taking Vernon in Calgary. As my boss at the time, Doug Reisbrough, the former Calgary GM, whispered to me, Craig doesn't know how much they hate Vernon in Calgary. And poor Craig didn't laugh long in Calgary because of the situation there. But a lot of these picks you'll see in an expansion draft are not for the player at all. I think maybe six of the first 11 picks had trades attached to them. Either that player was going to be traded or Doug McLean took a player because he either had a prior trade.
Yeah, Tom, in your book, How to Bake an NHL Franchise, and I do encourage, not just because you're on the show, but I do encourage hockey fans to pick up the book. It's a great insight into building an NHL team.
Tom, I've been trying to read it, but Richie won't give me his copy.
Well, I have an e-book, and I don't want to give him my portable device because I know I'll never get it back, like I wouldn't get a book back. But you talk about the expansion draft, as you kind of alluded to that with the question about the draft. It's changed now, of course, with the salary cap, which you worked under, but you didn't work under it when you had the expansion draft. How much of an effect do you think that will have on whatever team is invited into the league?
Well, it's had an effect already, in that you remember this from the book. Existing teams want to dump bad contracts. They want to get rid of salary, and new teams want to keep from spending too much on players they don't want, so they can keep it for free agents. And so Bill Daly's already come out and said there'll be a minimum amount of salary the new team has to take on, and the existing teams have to expose at least 25% of the prior year's cap. Mm-hmm. And so you've seen that effect already. The second effect the cap will have is it will kind of guide early trades before the expansion draft in order for teams to hit those minimums. Both, the new team and the older team wants to expose 25%. If you're looking at a situation, I think – a younger team or a more successful team than Tampa comes to mind, or even the Blackhawks, in order to get to 25% of last year's cap, you might acquire a workaday player who's making too much money just before the expansion draft, so you can expose them. I think you'll see a lot more of that this time around.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Our guest is Tom Lynn. Tom was the former assistant general manager of the Minnesota Wild when they entered the NHL back in the year 2000. We're discussing expansion drafts with him. He's currently a principal with Veritas Hockey. You know, Tom, you mentioned that, you know, back in 2000 it went goaltenders, then D, then forwards. It sounds like so far this year that there, or in the upcoming expansion draft, there's no rules outlining an order of position. You know, looking back, do you think that it's better that they went in order, goalies, then D, then forwards, or does it matter from your perspective at all?
I think it mattered then because you couldn't lose a goalie and a D, so that had to happen early on, and you could only lose one player per team. Two players total, but one player to the Wild, one player to Columbus on average. But you had to set it up that way because of the rules. Now, I caution you, the expansion rules aren't done yet. What they proposed to the owners at the last meeting was the framework for protecting and how many players you could lose. I think once the new team, whoever it is, buys in, let's say it's Las Vegas, once they buy in, I think those expansion draft rules are going to tighten up to protect existing teams a lot more. And it won't seem like a big deal to the casual observer, but believe me, a small tweak in the rules makes a huge difference. When Bill Daly wouldn't let the Wild take any more unsigned draft picks from existing teams, we're going to take three more, that changed the course at the end of our draft. You're going to see some tweaks that way, but goaltenders is going to be the place to look this time around because a lot of teams are only going to be able to protect one. And you're going to see a lot of scrambling, I think a lot of trades ahead of time, and then a lot of hard decisions made. In our time, the Wild picked Manny Fernandez early on as its goaltender of the future and made a trade before the expansion draft. So that Jamie McLennan, by the way, Jamie McLennan never ages, huh?
He looks great, yeah. He's
taking this as a backup, maybe he has some deal with the devil. But it what you'll see this time around is going to be a lot of scrambling. And you know what, guys? I mean, ever since, I would say, maybe Scotty Bowman winning a cup with Osgood, there's been a lot of talk that you don't need a top goalie to win a cup anymore. And so will there be teams who expose goalies who are fairly accomplished but high numbers in an effort to protect other players? I'm going to be fascinated by this one because a lot of the good teams nowadays, they play a system and they can work goalies in and out. And you never know which goalies you're going to succeed outside of, you know, the top guys like a Corey Crawford or, you know, someone who's been there. But the goaltender position will be the most fascinating. The second thing I'd say, not to ramble on, but I find this interesting about this expansion draft, when you look back to 2000, 2001, veterans dominated the league. And so it was a veteran league, and you had big names making $9, $10 million. Mm-hmm. Nowadays, if you look at the 10 most popular jerseys in the league or who's guiding the league right now, a lot of them are 25 or under. And so that's changed the dynamic for the expansion draft. Back then, we were looking for veterans for our team. Now, with the way the rules are set up, teams get first and second-year pros auto-protected, but they may have to expose third-year pros and beyond. For good young teams who are just building, you're saying, oh, we're rebuilding this Toronto Maple Leafs or Winnipeg Jets or Edmonton Oilers team. They're going to get hit the hardest. It almost seems unfair, but the teams that are doing it the right way and building young are going to be at the most risk in an expansion draft.
You know, Tom, you talk in your book about mapping out the your plan for expansion seems like it was in far greater detail than your counterparts in Columbus. That's, to me, that's a really interesting part here. If it's only one team coming in, it's a heck of a lot easier to plan for the expansion draft than trying to map out who the other team is going to take.
I know. It's almost cruel to have two at the same time, because let's say you're an existing GM, you're Kevin Sheveldayoff, and you're sitting in your office and you want to make some moves to set up your team for the expansion draft. First you call Las Vegas and say, I'll do this for you. Then you call Quebec and say, I'll do that for you. Mm-hmm. And then you watch them compete for your players, where if it's only one team, then the existing team, then Kevin's on the defensive. Then the expansion team calls and says, well, I'm going to take a good player of yours unless you do X, Y, and Z for me in trades. So it vastly shifts the dynamics. And if the league was serious about having good expansion teams, it would have them come in 2017 and then 2018, two expansion drafts rather than one. I doubt they'll do that.
Tom, Richie mentioned this earlier in the show when we thought you'd be the perfect person to ask because you've been on the GM side and then you've also now on the player agent side. There hasn't been a decision yet on players that have no movement clauses. How do you think that's going to work with the expansion draft?
That's a tough call. I mean, the conventional wisdom right now, which I think is good conventional wisdom, is that they cannot be, how would you say, they won't be counted as exposed players for existing teams. You can't have 20 no-move clauses and say, all right, well, there's my list, because it doesn't count. On the other hand, you know, the PA has to agree to this as well, the NHLPA, the Players Union. And so they want to see if there's a compromise made somewhere where players can waive those clauses or maybe possibly partially waive them that would come into play. But this is something that was not foreseen, I think, poorly so, by the parties when they did the last CBA. Not that the players care so much because they want the no-move clauses. But on the league side, in looking ahead, if you want to charge $500 million for a franchise, you should kind of look ahead 3 or 4 years and decide what you're going to do there, because you have some teams, as you guys know, who are very much handicapped by these no-move clauses right now just to making trades for an expansion draft. Oh, my gosh. They might have to expand some of the best young players if those guys with no-move clauses are not going to count on the list.
Tom, you look at expectations, and another thing you talked about, the Wild did a slow build. Doug Risebrough was very adamant about not setting expectations too high, even after surprising, maybe for the outsiders, at least initial success. Columbus took a different angle and didn't seem to really have that long-term view. With, you know, you talk about now, well, there'll be some catches for sure that maybe it looks beneficial to these expansion owners, but in reality, there'll be some things that make the players available not as appealing. How do you manage expectations, and do you think there'll be different expectations in, say, Las Vegas versus Quebec City?
Yeah, very much. Las Vegas is a tough market to gauge, and there's lots of opinions out there, as you've seen. I mean, on the one hand, people say you have to have a winner right away. On the other hand, people say, well, there's fans that are paying $400 a night to see Celine Dion.
Mm-hmm.
So why wouldn't you buy an NHL ticket?
Like Drew.
On the third hand, is it where if the product is entertaining and they connect with them, I really believe in this point. When Todd Lewicki came to Minnesota, it was like selling ice to the Eskimos. You had a lot of colleges here and a lot of amateur hockey. The high school hockey tournament sells out the building. They had enough hockey, and the North Stars had moved because they weren't drawing well enough. And the management here made a relationship with the fans, and they branded the team in such a way deep in the community that it worked. And in Atlanta, that did not happen. And people blame the city. It's like, oh, Minnesota's easy for hockey, Atlanta's bad. The North Stars moved. Like, it's how the team does it. If Las Vegas management and ownership does it right, it creates a relationship with the fan rather than selling tickets as commodities, as game night things. If you can get fans to believe in your team and connect with them like Green Bay Packers fans do or Chicago Cubs fans, they'll be fine. Quebec's a different animal. And I spent a lot of time, the GM and the AHL, in hockey and non-hockey cities, seeing how it's done. Quebec, I don't think, has to win so much as they have to respect hockey in the way they approach it.
Mm-hmm.
So what the Wild did in hiring Jacques Lemaire and getting certain kind of players in play is that they were a very respectable team from the start, even though they were losing. They played the game right, they worked hard, and they did the right things. I think Quebec will want to see a team, if it's not winning, is at least not inept, and that they care. You remember the old Atlanta teams sometimes given nights, or the early Ottawa teams looked like they didn't care. I think that's your issue in Quebec. You just got to have hockey players.
Okay, I'm going to look for a little bit of an exception or maybe some flaw and see what your thoughts are, Tom, because you worked in drafting the previous CBA and obviously his player agent, as Ezzy and Drew have mentioned. So if you have a player, say Jaromir Jagr, for example, he's plus 35. Mm-hmm. He has a bunch of bonuses that count towards conceivably the Florida Panthers' following year cap. If you were to draft him in the expansion draft on June 28th, can you use those bonuses as essentially fake cap money the following year and then let him go?
That's a good question. So if he earns those bonuses with the Panthers and the season ends, which it would before an expansion draft,
mm-hmm.
that the Panthers are charged with that season. So 16-17 season, they'd be charged with the Jagr's bonuses. If they had gone over the cap, their cap for the following year would be reduced, much like the Blackhawks are this coming season.
Right.
Consequently, if I acquired Jagr for the second year of his deal, I'd acquire him as of that day. So it would be whatever he earns prospectively,
okay,
and not in reverse. Now, given that's the general rule. In the current CBA, you can acquire salary as well. And so I could put into the deal, separate than the initial thing, that I'm acquiring X percent of his, prospective spending up to 50% of his deal, but I can't acquire spending from the past. So I hope that's not too complicated. I can only acquire future spending, not past spending under the CBA.
Tom, we'll let you go on this last question, and it has to do with, you know, how does an expansion team build their minor league affiliate?
Good question.
You know, that's what I was, you know, because you don't draft, you know, to fill, you don't, you know, in the expansion draft, you don't draft players as part of an AHL expansion draft, per se. So how would, you know, when the Wild joined the NHL back in 2000, how did you go building, I believe it was the Houston Aeros at the time as your IHL affiliate?
It was the Cleveland Lumberjacks the first year. And that IHL went under, we switched to Houston. But that's a very, very good question. I visited Cleveland 13 times that season. Every single time it sleeted. And I made the note. One time I was on the plane leaving. I was actually sitting in the plane and thought I escaped it, and they started de-icing, and the sleet started coming down off the lake. But, yeah, that first year was interesting. Todd McClellan was our coach, now the Edmonton Oilers coach, and he would have pulled his hair out, except he keeps it so short, which is a very good idea.
I have the same policy as well.
Yes, keep it short, you won't pull it out. But I found trying to grasp it at times. The expansion team takes shots on a lot of players because you're trying to find skill. That's the most difficult thing to find is scoring and skill. It's the most rewarded thing in our league financially, and it's the most difficult thing to trade for. And so when you start out, you're thinking, maybe I'll take a shot on some of these AHL stars. So players that are racking up 60, 70, 80 points in the AHL, at that time it was like Christian Matt and Brian Bonin. There's new names now. But you'll sign 8, 9, 10 guys who are longtime minor leaguers or European players who have a lot of points. They all get gathered in your AHL team, and as you could guess, most of them don't work out. I mean, if they're going to work out, they worked out already. Once in a while, you get a gem like Ante Lauksonen who plays in the NHL, but most of the players don't work out. And so you've got a highly skilled, highly undermotivated AHL team for the coach to deal with, because these guys are thinking, all right, I'm 32 or 34. This was my last chance to make the NHL. It's an expansion team, and I didn't make it, so I'm stuck in the AHL. We actually called up a player named Kai Nerman in our first year, halfway through the year, who had led the Finnish Elite League in scoring the year before, and he said to us, can I say no? He said, I'm comfortable here, my wife's happy, you know, 4 days in the NHL doesn't mean that much to me. That's how bad it gets. So the next year, you know, we were able to turn over, start putting draft picks there on younger guys. But the first year for an expansion team, it's really a lot of veteran players, and it's a careful mix. And Todd McClellan matured a lot as a coach that year. I'm sure he's using some of that experience this year dealing with the Oilers.
Tom Lynn is the former assistant general manager of the Minnesota Wild. He's currently a principal with Veritas Hockey. Tom, always appreciate your time and insight. Terrific conversation about what happens when the NHL expands. Thanks very much for joining us.
Thanks, guys. I'll see you up there soon.
We'll see you soon, Tom. Take care. Let's head to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
The Illegal Curve Hockey Show. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Drew, Ezra, and Richard return on TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
Big thank you to Tom Lynn for a really interesting conversation about what goes into making an NHL franchise. If you're interested in reading Tom's book, How to Bake an NHL Franchise from Scratch, the First Era of the Minnesota Wild, we're going to send out a link to it. It is a really good read for any hardcore hockey fan. And Tom's always a great guest here on the program, so we thank him for his time. This segment of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show is brought to you by Keener Jerseys. Keener Jerseys has become known as one of the world's best jersey customizers. If you want awesome jerseys for your rec team or have a jersey you want customized, visit Keener Jerseys online at keenerjerseys.com.
So how does Tom start off that book? Like, does he throw in a little flour,
I knew you were gonna
a little salt?
You know, it's funny, Ezzy, because actually the station's, you know, thinking of some new programs, and they've asked everybody to protect one or two members of each show.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. Ezzy and I have made a collective, an easy decision.
I'm out, aren't I?
You're
I'm
exposed.
Out. Okay.
Yeah, we actually decided to keep Eric over you.
Eric, the producer. Yeah, okay, well, that's fine. I can finally start what I've really wanted to start, which is my curling show and, you know, my college basketball dedicated show.
College basketball dedicated show. Is your curling show called Breaking the Button?
No, it's called Hogline Violation.
Oh my god!
No, you already have a ready-made name for the show. For those who haven't heard us talk about your curling team name, Win, Loser, Drew is the obvious name of your curling show.
Yeah, well, that would be a good name of a curling show, Drew. Who would be on it with you?
I'd have to have my curling team, Heather and Ryan, of course. You know, we talk about the latest on bond spiels, what happens in, you know, what I describe as the Friday night hipster curling league that I curl in, you know, things of that nature. What craft beer is drank on the ice during the course of the game, things of that nature. I don't see how riveting radio. I mean,
are you the skip?
I am the skip by default, really, more than anything.
I hope so.
Yeah. It's, you know. Anyways, we had a hard-fought battle last night, but we did fall to the best team in the league.
Hurry hard, Drew.
Hurry hard, indeed. Exactly. Hurry hard into our next conversation. Interesting article in today's Globe and Mail from Dave Schultz. And this sort of piggybacks on a conversation we had
about... This is the reason why you're being exposed in the expansion draft. While Ezzy and I are putting our hard-earned time into the Blackhawks game, you're curling and drinking beer.
Richie, let's be honest. We've been exposing Drew for the last 7 years.
Yeah. What's your excuse every other week? You know, I'm pretty sure that doesn't fly anyways. Interesting article, as I mentioned, from Dave Schultz of the Globe and Mail, in today's Globe and Mail, talking about, you know, sort of the TV habits of Canadians. And this piggybacks on a conversation we had about 10 days ago, I think, on Midweek, or was it last Saturday? I can't keep track anymore, where we talked about the NHL entering into that new relationship with Yahoo Sports, mm-hmm. where 4 games per week are going to be streamed online. I have confirmed now that that is not available in Canada, as we suspected, because that would be in violation of the Canadian TV rights deal. They have their own way about going at it. But here's the sort of the key takeaway that I found in this article. Can you get, and I'm probably mispronouncing his name, president of Solutions Research Group in Toronto, says the NHL has gained consumers who have started to follow the league on digital and social media in recent years. But the communications and technology consultant adds that the gains did not offset the losses of conventional TV viewers. By December of 2015, a survey of 500 Canadians showed the number of Canadians aged 12 and above who consumed the NHL on digital and social media increased by 9%. But in the same period, the number of Canadians watching on television dropped 22%. Overall, there was an 11% decline in Canadians who watched the NHL on any platform whatsoever. I mean, those are harrowing numbers for these TV media companies who have spent gazillions of dollars banking on Canadians to sit in front of their television, watch the games, watch the playoffs. And Dave Schultz goes on in the article where another consultant says the biggest problem facing these companies is that they have not yet figured out a way to monetize those who are watching the games on platforms other than sitting in front of a television.
Well, right, and I mean, Game Center is something that addresses that. You're not talking about major networks. I don't know, Drew. I'm not a network executive. I think it's interesting, you know, as a discussion to talk about this. I mean, we've talked about it before. A lot of people like to watch hockey on their iPads or their iPhones, but most people still have a subscription to traditional network TV. So in Winnipeg, whether that's Shaw or MTS, I get Center Ice. I know a lot of people that still get Center Ice. There's a lot of people that use Game Center and watch it on their iPad when they are, and you can hook it up to your TV. There's a bunch of different ways that you can watch hockey. And for me, that's not a problem for the consumer. That's a problem for the networks to figure out. For the consumer, it's great. There's a lot of different options to consume sports. So I don't think this is a bad thing.
Yeah, there are so many interesting trends, Drew, and you mentioned it. Well, Dave Schultz mentions it in the Globe article. You know, how do you get to monetizing digital consumption? Meaning, how do you get to monetizing? You know, somebody not sitting on the couch and watching a game. Are they watching on their phone, or are they watching on their iPad or Surface, whatever the heck it is, as he mentions, their tablet?
Mm-hmm.
And how do you make money on that? And you're seeing now the big companies are having problems determining that. I think eventually we'll find it. And you're seeing a lot of what Twitter and Facebook are trying to get live streaming of television rights.
Sure.
And we mentioned last week, I'd read that ESPN had been in talks with Apple. So you're seeing that the landscape will change in terms of how you consume it, but the product seemingly will remain the same. Like I'm saying that in a question form because I'm not a marketing executive or a cable executive or a satellite executive, but you're still going to watch hockey. It's just how are you going to watch hockey? And you talk about those numbers. I'm not so sure I would consider that to be a huge issue. Like I don't think fans of sports are going away. I don't think those numbers, I would, like, you know, there's always a number for everything. I'm sure there's a number that would offset that. I think everybody's as interested or more interested than they used to be in consuming sports.
Well, it's going to be something that we will continue to monitor here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. When we come back, we're going to talk about the playoff races and some key injuries and the impact they'll have as we head into the final few weeks of the NHL season. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
The Illegal Curve Hockey Show.